Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Number two, Libations Friday edition of the Jeff Cameron Show. Pretty loosey-goosey. Maybe not as loosey-goosey as it normally would be. Bear with me. Sorry if I don't sound great or if the energy's lacking dealing with COVID. But should be all right here in the next couple of days. And certainly, we're not missing any time. We couldn't possibly miss today on a day in which Florida State announces a new baseball coach. And it is indeed Link Jarrett. That will carry the momentum into the weekend, right? We're all excited about that. Florida State, I think, gets it right. They get a guy that a lot of teams around the country wanted, a guy that obviously would be very interested in coming home. Seemed like a no-brainer. Florida State made it efficient and easy, played out the right way. And so, Link Jarrett, we welcome you as the new baseball coach at Florida State. And it'll be interesting to see what his staff looks like. I talked about it in a video we did on War Chant TV earlier this morning with Ira and Corey and Tom Produce and myself. You know, that he's got a little bit of work to do initially. Obviously, he'll meet with his players and find out which guys are all in and locked in and excited to play for him and those that were considering maybe looking elsewhere. I don't think it's a hard sell. I think that most people who follow college baseball, certainly if you play college baseball, you're aware of who's who. You know, at this point, you know that that's a guy that has had a lot of success in the game, played the game at a high level right here in Tallahassee, right here at Florida State, was an All-American, and is a guy that obviously loves the Noles and has had success coaching outside the program. So I don't think he's going to have to win over too many people, but that'll be the first thing that he does. And then obviously he's got to get that staff together and figure out where we go from here on the recruiting trail. It's a big weekend for Florida State. Speaking of recruiting, I should make mention that you can read all of those stories on warchant.com, including the story about Link Jarrett. Corey Clark wrote one. I know Ira had the release when Florida State officially announced it. By the way, Monday, 10:30 a.m. is when the press conference will happen for Link Jarrett. What a great day that's got to be for him, man. What a cool thing for him. And of course, a lot of us are looking at this as a win for Mike Alford, a win for the new athletic director. It's hard not to look at it that way. Ultimately, Mike Alford, despite these early successes in the eyes of most, is a guy that will be judged by football. And so while this is a good sign moving forward, I do think that, you know, at the end of the day, the bigger issue and the bigger moment for his tenure here will be with football. And let's just knock on wood that it's us talking about the extension that he's giving Mike Norvell after a 9-win campaign, Tom. The weekend I alluded to here in Tallahassee is recruiting. What do you got, 8 guys, I think, coming into town that are important?
Yeah, you got a bunch of guys, including perhaps quarterback Chris Parson, which would be interesting if he makes it here, given that that's been a rocky relationship of late. Yeah. So, and listen, I'm not up to the minute on that stuff. That's where you got to make sure you follow at warchant.com. You go to the premium recruiting board and make sure you keep up to date with what Michael Langston's reporting, Austin Cox is working on as well. They'll keep you up to date there. I do have a bit of news, though, because the letter of understanding that Link Jarrett had signed is now in our inboxes. And we have the first couple of years worth of compensation for Link Jarrett, which I was wondering what that number would be. And it's a 7-year deal. I reported that this morning. But $875,000 is the number for the first couple of years. It goes up as time goes on. It looks like Florida State had to cut a check of just over $100,000 to Notre Dame for the buyout. Whoop-de-doo. That's no big deal at all. But Link Jarrett, 7 years, and it starts at $875K and climbs up as time goes on.
Tells you a couple things. So obviously they're basically doubling what they were paying Mike Jr. Pretty close to doubling that. I think the other thing it tells you is, again, Notre Dame is not committed to paying a baseball coach $1 million plus. That's not a program that has met with a huge amount of success. I tried to, without belittling people, when we had this discussion in the past, I perhaps belittled sometime. I see the smirk on your face. But without belittling people, I was trying to explain that the football mentality that our fan base seems to, or a percentage of our fan base seems to apply to all things that have nothing to do with football, would not matter here. That the fact that college baseball coaches don't make anything close to college football coaches. Universities, many universities, including Notre Dame, don't view baseball as a particularly important sport or a revenue-producing sport. So this was not going to be an arms race for a program of Notre Dame's stature and what they have in the coffers, and then a program of Florida State's program stature and what they have in the coffers. Florida State is an infinitely superior baseball program to Notre Dame. It's not even, they're not even, they don't live on the same street. They're not even in the conversation. Notre Dame isn't when it comes to baseball compared to Florida State. And then you throw in the mix that the man played here, is from here, wanted to come back here. And then you throw into the mix that Florida State was going to put together an offer that puts him amongst the higher paid coaches in the sport. $875,000, or is that what you just said, I think?
Yes, that's correct.
That puts him in great standing amongst the world of college baseball coaches. It's just not a sport that pays millions of dollars per year for its coaches, unless you have a university that has more money than sense, like Texas A&M and a few others that might be willing to grossly overpay their college baseball coach.
Well, a couple of things here. Number one, it's like any negotiation with any free agent in major sports and professional sports. If you're talking about athletes, you can lower the annual value if you increase the term. So I think, you know, going 7 years allows you not have to part with an extra $300,000 or $400,000 up front per season. And the other thing that frees Florida State up to do is now in this letter of understanding, it says that a $450,000 pool will be put together for two full-time assistants and a support staff hire as well. So they got $450K what they were paying Meat just to hire assistant coaches. That's good. I'm sure that's a bump up from where it was before, in addition to the fact that they're doubling his salary. So it all seems good. And if you hear some of the whispers around and you listen to him and you give him weight, it sounds like some of the people that are involved money-wise with the baseball program have committed to investing and helping Hauser get better. You know, you can't bulldoze it yet, but that's an important thing too, that you have the blessing of the people, because it was divided among the money people, just like it was divided among the fan base, what the right course of action was for Florida State's baseball head coaching job.
Okay, so what I was, what I would add to that piece of information, Tom, is that most people understand, and if you're not in a baseball culture, good for you, because you don't want to be. It's a terrible place to live. Baseball culture is awful. If you've ever been amongst travel team parents, you know how awful it is. There's nothing worse than travel ball, and there's nothing worse than the parents at travel ball. And the whole thing, anyhow, I bring all of this up because everybody grew up playing baseball of a certain age. So everybody thinks they know what should happen with every baseball coach, every baseball team, how it should work. Every Tom, Dick, and Harry's got an opinion about baseball because they played it. Because they played it. Not everybody can play football. Not everybody can play basketball. Not everybody, but everybody grew up playing baseball. So they all think they know a ton about baseball, and it's quite maddening. Now, that said, it's also very political. Baseball is very political, and you get into these high school arguments, and it goes all the way through into college. It is fascinating. The coach is playing this guy because he's best friends with that kid's dad. My son is an infinitely superior shortstop. If that son of a bitch doesn't do the right thing, I'm going to transfer and expose him. And these are the kinds of things that go on all the time in the world of baseball, and that continues to work right up to the money. right up to the money. Who's given? Who's going to pull money if this guy's not hired or this guy's not brought in? Who's willing to stay the course and pay this guy more? And all of that was going on back when Mike Martin Jr. got hired after Olevin was deciding to retire. This became a political struggle that, of course, always is going to involve money. And at the end of the day, I'm not going to get into the nuts and bolts of all of that, but you have a couple of very important people when it comes to baseball who have largely for many years, now they've backed off some over the years, controlled the financial purses, Tom, the purse strings, all right? This is kind of what they've done for a long time. I'll put money here. I'll put money there. This is the guy I'd like to see get the job. Those kinds of people, right? So the point would be one of the things that had to happen when the transition was desired by the new athletic director was that some of those people who have been involved in baseball for a long time and, again, are considered quote-unquote money people had to sign off on it. And I think that you see a signifier here that there's a willingness to go a different direction. Now, it made it easier that you were going to be bringing home one of our own. I think that certainly made it easier for people who have been long-term invested in baseball. But I also think that those people, by saying, I'm willing to go there with you and to embrace this transition, it was their way of saying, go ahead and do what we think you have to do. Unfortunately, this didn't work out. And oh, by the way, you have my support. And by the way, you have my support, they mean I'll help you financially to do what needs to be done. And so a lot of questions got answered with the hiring of Link Jarrett. Not just that your athletic director was willing to identify a problem and do something about it, but that the whole transitional team from athletic director on down was in favor of the steps that need to be taken. And of course, those are always also going to involve money. So I suggest to you now that in the next couple of years, you're going to start to see some changes regarding Florida State's Dickhauser Stadium, Mike Martin Field. What those look like, I do not know. To what degree, I do not know. It could very well be that they seek to build a brand new stadium. Who knows? But I do think you're going to see this bigger vision, this larger transition of which I speak, take place.
Yeah, the question is, if you have, let's just say, 1 million widgets to use, right, 1 million pesos, where are you going to spend the money? Where are you going to put it into? And would it be the infrastructure for the clubhouse and the players, so it's more attractive to the players? Or is it going to be cosmetic because you want ticket sales? Or is it, you know, for every dollar you spend on, you know, making the offices better for the coaches or the setup better for the players, you got to spend an equal part to help the stadium look a little bit better? Is Dickhauser Stadium salvageable? Now, I know you would say no, or would require a hell of a lot of money. You might as well build a new one at that point. That might be the way that they see it. But you're going to get an idea here. If they are putting lipstick on a pig with some of these repairs or updates that are to
they've got new padding.
Right. Well, if they've got more of that, like the seating area, maybe they expand it a little bit. If it's not a major overhaul of a project, then I would think the long-term vision is that they're going to build a new stadium. Like if it looks like a short-term fix, kind of a 500 grand was thrown into Dickhauser to do this or that, the concourse is going to look nicer. If it is overhaul down one of the baselines, like they're putting in seating that's going to connect all the way to the foul pole and there's going to be a luxury, you know, bar area or something like that, that tells me that Hauser will remain. And this is going to be the plot of land it's on come hell or high water. But it'll be fascinating to hear, just as a citizen of this town, I know it doesn't matter to a lot of the Noel fans out there that are regional, but as a citizen of Tallahassee, I want Hauser to be a place to be. I want more amenities there. So hopefully we get some announcements to that end here soon.
Yeah, I'm excited about that too. It's always fun to watch this stuff play out. I've been here for a lot of the changes, and I know these are always indications of how old I'm getting. I can remember when they expanded the stadium the last time, Tom, and I remember thinking that was a huge deal because I went to games long before that had happened. And, you know, I there was a time where that was the gym of college baseball for a short period of time, and it hasn't been in a long time. So just from a nostalgic standpoint, from a love of school and for a program that deserves better, I hope that there are real thoughts moving forward on how to get the most out of this baseball program. That certainly involves facility as well. I'll tell you what, at some point, we probably be right to bring on Chip Baker to have this conversation if he would do it. Now, Chip is not in the business of ruffling feathers, but he's the kind of guy, and he knows I am, so he would probably say no. He would probably say, I know what you're going to do. You're going to get me on under the auspices of being friendly, and then you're going to ask a very pointed question that puts me on the spot, and I'm going to look like a jerk, and I can't answer that, and you know that, and then you're going to go.
Chip, how much does Hauser suck?
Yeah. Well, I don't know that I would ask him that kind of a loaded question, but I would maybe ask the same thing phrased slightly differently. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, and then he'd be like, great.
Yeah, depend on the day. It would depend on your mood.
Yeah, it would. But anyhow, that's funny. I love talking to Chip, and I've known him for many, many years, and I know he has opinions on Dick Hauser and what can be done. I just don't think he's ever going to share them on this show. I'll put it that way. The Jeff Cameron Show, 93.3 Real Talk Radio and War Chant TV.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back guaranteed. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I have a follow-up, Tom. You wanted to know the answer to the story I was reading earlier, David Pernham's story, if you guys are interested in reading the whole thing on ESPN, about this man who had properly, Tanner Flynn, a tech salesman in Nashville, put together a parlay for the ages in which he bet Usman to beat Masvidal, took the Lakers back in 2020 to win the NBA Finals, the Dodgers the same, the Lightning the same at plus 600 in 2020. Now you fast forward to this season, and he's already on the verge of doing it again. He has the Avalanche, who, if they finish off the Lightning tonight, win the Stanley Cup, and he will in turn win the bet, go back to when he decided to do it. He was in his apartment in Nashville, and he put together Golden State, took the Rams, took the Georgia Bulldogs, who I also had, by the way, and he took the Avalanche. He also decided to throw in a random UFC fight. He won that when Whitaker lost to Desanya, and that $25 bet will pay. By the way, Tom, here's your answer. It was plus 136,367 were the odds.
Oh, my God. I thought it was just the couple of major sports teams. So it's all of these other wrinkles to it, too?
So, wow. No, he adds, he'll always add a UFC fight. And then, of course, he took the national champions in college football. He took the Super Bowl winner, the Stanley Cup winner, and the NBA Finals winner. And so, yeah, that's his bet. That's where he's going with it.
At plus 136,000, 25 mm-hmm. bones. Oh my goodness!
Can you imagine, like, sitting there tonight?
Can you imagine the heartbreak? You know, when the Lightning come back from 3-1 down, and somehow Vassie makes 55 saves a game.
Well, here's what I will tell you: at what point do you hedge and lock in that profit, baby? Because if the Lightning win tonight, you're going to hedge if you're him.
Yeah, and you would get a really good payday, I would think. I mean, you're looking at rough math, but you're looking at, what, $3 million, something like that, close to $3 million in profit? So they would be offering you around $800,000 to a mil?
I don't know how it would work. I just would love to be in the position. I would like to find out what kinds of choices I have as I lock in said profit. That's what I would like to do. That would be a joy. I've never been in that position. I've never had any luck typically with parlays. I don't know. We'll see. You know, I want to segue here because I see you guys talking about it on the chat. And this is yet another reason why we need Mike Norvell to get it right, okay? To to not put us in a position, no matter how good we feel about the direction of the athletic programs under Mike Alford, we don't want to have to start over. So I'll ask you this. The question that they presented on the boards here or on the chat was, who is the football equivalent to baseball's Link Jarrett? Who is the guy, the no-brainer, that Florida State goes out and gets if Mike Norvell fails? And I've asked myself that question many times, and I don't have a good answer. And that tells you where we're at. A lot of times when you watch college football, you'll find three or four guys at any one time that you know are the huge names, the guys that you'd want to go get, right? Who's that guy? Who's that guy? Who's that guy that realistically you'd be able to go get?
It's Mark Stoops, buddy.
See? See what I'm saying? Who's that guy, Tom? Who's the guy that's the no-brainer that you're going to go out and get if it doesn't work out with Norvell? And that you have a realistic shot. You can't like, oh, I'd go out and get Nick Saban. Yeah, no, you won't. Like, so you got to name realistic candidates that feel like can't miss selections. And right now in the world of college football, there aren't too many guys that fit that bill.
Yeah, I'm only kind of quasi-kidding, too, with because I think that's the one that fits all of the parameters, which is like, who can you afford? Where are you as a program? What's your overall situation? And who can do more with less? He's the one that fits because he's done more with less at Kentucky. Now, I understand the windfall of SEC money has started to come in by leaps and bounds since he took over at that program. But when he took over at Kentucky, 9-win seasons or 10-win seasons were a complete pipe dream, and nobody cared about that program relative to basketball. So I'm not trying to be the band leader here. I want Norvell to succeed, and this could be a moot point, but if you're trying to go through that exercise of, like, who is realistically out there, attainable, and can work in this situation and make it work, I don't know many other candidates other than the dude up at Kentucky.
So you would say Luke Fickell is the answer, I think, where he's done at Cincinnati, but his ties are all to Ohio State and, right. You know, yeah, I mean, but Day's not going anywhere. So maybe he gives up on the pipe dream of Ohio State.
I don't know. Now you said recently that they were recruiting really well, right? They were in the next year's recruiting
Cincinnati
class rankings.
Is, yeah. Cincinnati is. Yeah.
I'll go study that class and see how many kids are in the Southeast footprint. If he has a few, then maybe I would change my story.
Yeah, I think that's the hard part, right? There are guys. Like, so, for example, some people have asked about Utah, and you guys know how much money I've made off of Utah, who I also think is a candidate to make us more money this year in Utah. Kyle Whittingham's a coach at Utah, and he does a great job. And I don't think he's leaving. He's got a real good situation. I don't think he's coming to the Southeast. I don't think he would, you know, want to coach Florida State necessarily. And that is the other part of the equation. When we think of these candidates, there are people that succeed in certain areas of the country where they have ties, where they have connections to the high schools in the region, where they have a system, for lack of a better term, set up where they can have success that don't necessarily portend of success elsewhere. You know, if you're a West Coast guy your whole life and you've lived out there, you grew up out there, you played football out there, you went to endless coaches camps out there and football camps when you were a player out there, then you have connections in those areas that have tentacles, right? They go on for days, but they're primarily on the West Coast. And then you uproot all of that and you go to the East Coast or you go to the South. Guarantees, there are no guarantees that it's going to work out for you there. So it's tough. It's tough. I know a lot of our fan base, or at least anytime I look at the chat, I crack up laughing. Everybody wants Lane Kiffin. And of course, Lane Kiffin is a scumbag of the greatest proportion. He's a very difficult guy for me to stomach to say out loud. But I understand most people don't care about that. They would say, hey, bring in whoever you got to bring in. I mean, I'll tell you. I would have a hard time with that, but, you know.
Well, who would you bring in first, Lane Kiffin or Deion Sanders? Well, I mean, it's a fair question. Both of them clearly know how to recruit in the modern era, and, you know, I'm sure Deion would have the full weight of the financial backing behind him the same way that Lane would. So who would you rather have?
I'd like to look elsewhere. I'd like us to look elsewhere on both fronts, and we can go from there. And I've brought up the reasons why for many times, for many years. I don't feel like having this fight yet again. But it's not, I don't mean you and me. It's absurd. But I'm talking about realistic coaches that you could bring in here who've accomplished something in the sport in that realm. And we don't have as much in the way of weighty off the field issues to kind of navigate.
Well, that's why you have the answer right here. That's the thing. He's already in that office. You don't need to have him clean out his office. He just needs to get it together this season, and we're on the right path, sir.
Yeah.
Boy, you don't believe that at all.
I do believe that. I've said this a lot lately. I believe there are a lot of good coaches who get fired. It happens all the time. I think there are a ton of good coaches who get fired. And, you know, Mike Norvell, I don't know where I stand on that. I'm worried for him. I believe he's a good coach. And I'm rooting for him to get it right because I don't want to start over. I'm tired of starting over. And no matter who we hire, okay, I don't care if it's Deion Sanders, if it's Lane Kiffin or whoever. I mean, that seems like a ridiculous conversation. But no matter who it is, you're starting over, and starting over is no good, man. You're screwed for your first class in recruiting. You're just the whole thing. We've seen how these first-year coaches, even with reputations, good ones, struggle mightily. I'm going to be very interested to watch. I'll tell you a good case study. Let's find out. Let's see what Billy Napier does at Florida. I think he's a good football coach, but there's a guy that is coming from Louisiana, obviously, and let's see how well he does. I think it's going to be important for him to get off to a good start. I do think he's a good football coach, but recruiting is everything. I agree with you there. And so I'm kind of curious to see these coaches, a lot of these guys, with everything sped up the way that it is now, if you don't hit early or you don't have a successful season early for whatever reason, the ship could sail and you could never bring it back to port. It could very well be you're never able to get a handle on.
Well, for the Napier situation, how huge is that game against Utah in week two, where you're hosting, well, it might be week one for them, but you're hosting Utah, who's bringing back a lot of their players in the trenches. I know that because I was educated by somebody that's on this screen, not named myself, but they're bringing back a lot of the work in the trenches. They've got a good football coach and an established program. They know who they are. But they're playing in the humidity in September in Gainesville, Florida. So that's a distinct advantage. Plus, it's going to be a raucous atmosphere for a coaching debut. But you better win that game or show out okay, because if Utah stomps them to start the regime of Billy Napier, that might set them back for this recruiting class. Because as you said before, September is a dangerous month if you don't play very well in it. And you know, God forbid they lose to Utah and then they lose to Tennessee. In the month of September, that thing might be dead before it even gets a chance to get off the ground.
Let's hope, Tom. Let's hope that that's what happens. Let's hope that Florida loses by 27 and questions begin almost immediately. It'd be wonderful. I'm laughing, Ryan. I see your comment. Jeff would have started Will Greer after he did a line of coke on the coach's desk, but he won't jump on the Lane train. I'd be more apt to go that direction than I would Deion. Yeah, I would be.
I figured that was the answer. Real quick, Florida's first four games, it's Utah.
Yeah, they got Kentucky early, too.
Week two, they host Kentucky. Then they play USF, whatever. And then they go on the road to Rocky Top. So those first four games are a bear for a brand-new coach, given the way that the East is shuffled right now. It shouldn't be traditionally speaking, but Kentucky and Tennessee, where they are relative to Florida, that's a tough stretch to start their season.
Hey, give me the give me their first four games again in order.
Utah. September 3rd, yeah. Okay, Kentucky. It's a primetime kick, 7 o'clock on the 10th in Gainesville.
Yeah, they're going to win that game.
All right, South Florida, whatever, at home. And then they travel to Rocky Top, September 24th.
So that'll be key. That's the huge one right there because they're slight underdogs at home against Utah. That's a pick 'em game. I like Utah in that game with the experience that they have at quarterback and on that offensive line. I think they're also really physically tough. Should be a fun game. The Kentucky game, I know they lost a year ago. Weird set of circumstances there. Or do I have that right? They won that game a year ago, didn't they? Double check that. No, they lost that game. That was a weird game.
We'll go with that.
But but then I think obviously USF, they'll blow the doors off of USF. It's a nothing program. But then you go the Tennessee game, Rocky Top. Everybody thinks that they have real momentum in Tennessee. I'm not so sure I agree with that. Let's find out what happens. 2-2 for the Gators to start the year. That'd be nice.
Yeah, and then they got a bit of a break in the middle of the schedule. It's Eastern Washington, so that's their win. October 1st, what a strange time to play that game. They host Mizzou. You should win that football game. But then it's LSU, Georgia, and Texas A&M in your next three. I mean, that's brutal.
Yeah, could be a tough day at the office. What a shame. What a shame. Hate to see it, Tom. Hate to see it. Jeff Cameron Show, 93.3 Real Talk Radio and War Chant TV.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Live Nation's Friday rolling on. Jeff Cameron Show, 93.3 Real Talk Radio, War Chant TV. Good to be with you. Appreciate you. Ryan asked something during the break. Since it is loosey-goosey, I'll address it. There is an aspect to this that we have not talked about, and I have thought about, especially now that you see, obviously, he's empowered. Now, again, there are a lot of other factors that will come into play. It's a football coach, not a baseball coach, but he noted that he's interested, since Norvell was not Mike Alford's guy, if 8-4 the next two seasons would be good enough. I think on the heels of the disastrous last 5 years, yes, it probably would be. I think other circumstances, and this is an arc, if you think about the arc of the arguments that we've had over the years, you may remember, Tom, I had one towards the end of the Jimbo era with Corey Clark on Seminole Headlines, in which I said, if Florida State went 10-3 two or three years in a row, and we got further and further removed from the Jameis Winston era, and we consider what came before it and what was now happening after it, I argued that at that point, the program's clout was such that people would begin to get restless, that some people would begin to say that he's underwhelming, underachieving, and has reached a place of stagnation. And Corey disagreed with me, and back and forth we went. And, of course, it all depends on, in the given moment, what kind of clout, what kind of money, what kind of investment, what kind of previous successes have led to this discussion, right? If Florida State is a perennial national power and is competing for a spot in the college football playoff every year and suddenly takes a turn south to lose 3-4 games 3 or 4 years in a row, then you the reality is you're very likely, I should say, to be inclined to want a guy to be removed. If you've had losing seasons for the last handful of years and somebody gets you to 8-4 in consecutive seasons, you're not as quick to want to pull the trigger, I don't think. I don't even know that it enters your mindset.
Yeah, I'd say, 8-4, it's interesting. The first thing I did was I went to 2023 to see the future opponents. And, of course, you're playing LSU again next year, and that game's going to be in Orlando. You play Florida. Your cross-division, your inter-ACC opponent outside of Miami is Virginia Tech on the road. Now, typically that would make you blush, but I don't know if in 2023 that makes you blush. And then it's North Alabama and Southern Miss. So, in short, I'd say this feels like a little bit more of a gettable schedule in 2023 with where you should be as a program. So 8-4 shouldn't feel as good in 2023. If it was a year in which you had Notre Dame and Georgia or something like that, which is technically on the horizon if college football isn't imploding by then maybe 8-4 in back-to-back years would certainly be a rousing success enough, right, that Alford would retain Mike Norvell. But just looking at that schedule next year, we'll see how it lays out when the time comes. I don't know. 8-4 seems awfully doable. If it's doable this year, then most certainly you need to go 8-4 next year, at minimum.
Isn't it funny how we do this? I am just like you, and I'm like all our listeners. It's not hard for me to skip the upcoming important season and look ahead at the 1, 2, and 3 years from now. I do it all the time. I'm forever. I'm like, well, yeah, we know this season's important. What are we going to look like the following year? It's ridiculous. We're always looking on the horizon. What is the landscape going to look like 3 years from now? And where's our place in it? You know, it's all going to be dictated by what you do this upcoming year.
It will be, but this was part of the exercise. And we've broken down this schedule every which way that you possibly can. And so for me, part of the exercise was assume 8-4 this year. And then take a look at next year, because I haven't really crunched the numbers on that schedule, and is it acceptable? And I'd say, first blush, no, I don't think it would be. If you're 8-4 this year, then you better damn sure go minimum 8-4 next year. You can't go back to 7-5 or 6-6. That's not how this works.
No. He's saying back-to-back 8-4 season.
Yeah.
Nobody's suggesting that it would be okay to go 8-4 and then 6-6. No. At that point, man, yeah, I don't... It's interesting. Depending on the guy you run into at the bar, he doesn't think 8-4 is okay. It's funny. People are stuck in the mindset of Florida State should play for or compete for a national championship every year. We aren't that program right now, guys, and that is the sad reality.
Well, what if you finish 9-4 this season? And that could it just means that you could be 9-3 with a bowl loss or 8-4 with a bowl win. I mean, I would think even that guy at the bar, if you threw 9 at him, like we talk about all the time, sometimes the way you throw numbers, it just changes. If you say something's a month away, that hurts. If you say it's only 29 sleeps away, that feels a lot better than a month away. 29 sleeps away feels a whole lot better. If you say we're going to have 9 wins this season and you omit that it might be a bowl game that gets you to 9, I think that dude at the bar might be more apt to say, okay, all right, 9 wins, that's doable. Because it also allows us to watch our team play in December, which we haven't done in forever, and get a chance to win a football game in December. So that'd be pretty cool.
They got to stay healthy at the end of the day. I think they're good enough with their starting 22 to win 8 games. Maybe if the ball bounces right in all the 50-50 games and you win the turnover luck battle and you stay injury-free. I mean, there's a lot of contingencies here, but if that were to happen, you could get to 9 wins. And if that happens, obviously the ball should get rolling in recruiting and you start to feel much better about projecting better seasons in the years to come. There'd be real momentum in recruiting at that point. I don't think 7-5 garners any momentum in recruiting. That's why I kind of exclude that. A lot of people say that the magic number is 8. Yeah, I think it does, because I think if by chance you win 8 games, it means you beat a couple of teams that a lot of people right now don't think that you were going to beat.
Yeah, though by definition, that's correct. And what's interesting, and maybe this is the right answer to the earlier question I posited, is how important can September really be? Like, how important can the results of September be if you've got a signing period in December? Can you do enough? Well, maybe the answer is, if you're at Rising Spear, and this isn't tongue-in-cheek, I legitimately mean this. If you're at Rising Spear, you are trying to garner enough funds that when you get an excuse that a kid picks up your phone call, if you're Mike Norvell, you've got, quite separately from the coaching staff, of course, quite separate worlds, but you've got an NIL incentive package ready to go for that player, and they're going to take your call. Maybe that's what it's about, is September puts you in a position to where if you raise money well enough between now and then, you can capitalize and take it and get a kid to say yes to your NIL deal, because that will be what puts you over the top.
You know, I think what's fascinating is the idea, Tom, that the fan base has a mindset, a collective mindset. I think if we were judging what that is, it's that Norvell has to take this massive step forward. He's got to win 8 games this year. Some people won't be satisfied unless it's 9 games, whatever that might be. But we don't know what the university's mindset is, what Mike Norvell's mindset is, and what the money people think. Now, I know that most of the big-time money people like Norvell. They do. They like him a lot. They've been willing to exercise patience. They understand that he inherited a nightmare and that these things take time. Nobody is interested in starting over yet again. They also are a group of people that are well aware of Florida State's prestige and where they would like them to get back to. So if you polled those people, they might think something very different. They might, because they like Mike, because he's garnered good relationships with them, they may look at this as he can go 7-5, 6-6. I don't think that would get him fired. I've said it before. It would make him a dead man walking, but it wouldn't lead to his firing. there are those out there who cover this program who believe that this year is a year that a move could be made. And that if he went 5-7, he could get fired. I don't know what a magic number is. I'm not sitting across from Mike Alford having this discussion, nor am I sitting across from a few of the major money people. I don't know what they think. I don't know what they believe. Is there a magic number, or is it more about how the team plays, both good or bad, and what leads to that total?
So what I'd say is, and again, I'm not speaking for Mike Norvell, or Michael Alford, either, and his thought process, but it's at least from our perspective on the outside more plausible that a move could be made this year because of the actions we've seen from the athletic director to this point. And he's quick to punch guy when it comes to negotiations and or making things happen, either elevating, raises, terminations, whatever it is. He seems to be a quick to act person. And so if it's even in the realm of possibility for Michael Alford, I would think that the chances of this year being the end have to increase based upon what we've seen, what's publicly consumable, which is what he's done with other sports, right?
Again, though, that conversation is a little different. I agree collectively with the mindset, but what I would tell you is this was a no-brainer. You had a candidate who was a candidate that everybody agreed upon and had Florida State ties and wanted to come back here. That made perfect sense. If Florida State has to fire Mike Norvell at the end of this year, who's the guy waiting in the wings that you know you can get that's going to make the change palatable, that's going to make starting over palatable, well, that's going to make, you know, that's not the same thing.
I agree, but I think in that instance he would say, and again, this is like a deep role-playing for Mike Alford, but it would be, it's my guy. That's his answer. It would be my coach, and I'm not going to get fired at Florida State because I went on too long with something that clearly just wasn't going to work. Was it middling? Yes. Was it getting better incrementally? But was it getting better fast enough? No. And again, he might listen to this whole segment and laugh and say, man, if he goes 6-6 or 7-5, that's fine. That's showing incremental progress and that's good enough for me. I don't know where he stands on the issue. I'm just saying you have to consider it as more of a real possibility that maybe a change could be made or some aggressive step could be taken this offseason. Because, you know, Alford has been willing to do that in the other sports, and he's
acted quickly. Two very different things. Yeah, you're right. Two very different things. The fans' mindset is 6-6. He's lost all support. There's no doubt. There would be the percentage of Florida State fans that would be supporting Mike Norvell if he goes 6-6 this year is going to drop below 20%. I think if you were just going to randomly poll Florida State fans at different parts of the state, let's say if you're visiting your parents or something and you ran into a Knoll and you asked him about Mike Norvell, if he goes 6-6 this year, they'd be like, yeah, well, we're screwed until we get this slapdick out of here. That's exactly what he's going to think. And I believe that it's a very different conversation if it's 8-4, obviously. But what Alford's thinking or the big boosters are thinking, I don't know. It could very well be you guys are nuts. If he goes 7-5, we're going to be in heaven.
You just got to ask that question in code when the season's over at the end of every month. Like, how willing are you to go to Orlando for next year's kickoff against LSU? And then very likely, not likely, no way, no how. Like, just send that out every few games and see what the fans' response is, because they're actually telling you how they feel about where the program is going, whether or not they want to deal with iDrive and all that nonsense that we're going to have to next year.
You remember, by the way, Tom, we found out, man, that the gate matters.
Yes.
Fans will they'll talk to you now. They'll make those decisions a little bit easier for an athletic director. Those gates matter big time. Let's do some probable, shall we? Fire away, buddy.
It's time for, how you say, with the pitching, probables?
Before I get to probables, I see live spectators that if Norvell fails, desperation sets in. Lane Kiffin is more of a possibility. You're right. When desperation sets in, who knows? Yeah, I suppose. Mets, Marlins, Tawan Walker, Sandy Alcantara, Stros, Yankees, Justin Verlander having himself a fine campaign, Luis Severino, Red Sox, Guardians, Nick Pivetta, Cal Quantrill. We got the Pirates and the Rays, Mitch Keller, Jeffrey Springs. I would have loved to have gone down there this weekend, but alas. Dodgers, Braves, Julio Urias and Ian Anderson, Nats, Rangers, Paolo Espino, Dave Dunning. We've got the A's and the Royals, Cole Irvin, Zach Greinke. Boy, Zach Greinke is just out here sucking. Rockies, Twins, Germán Márquez, Dylan Bundy. We got the Orioles and the White Sox, Austin Voth and Michael Kopech. Blue Jays, Brewers, Alec Manaea and Adrian Howard. Cubs, Cards, Kyle Hendricks, Andre Pallante. Mariners, good name. Mariners, Angels, Chris Flexen, Michael Lorenzen, Tigers, D-backs, Ronnie Garcia, Merrill Kelly. Phillies, Padres, Aaron Nola, Mackenzie Gore, Reds, Giants, Graham Ashcroft, and Alex Cobb, the insufferable Graham Ashcroft and Alex Cobb. And that is a look at those that shall reside on the bump. By the way, I think that's kind of funny. When we have a full slate like this, if I'm going to be locked in the house for 3 days, Tom, thank goodness baseball has got me covered. There's 150 games tonight.
Yeah, you got one more at minimum hockey game, so maybe something good can come of it tonight at 8 o'clock on ABC, and they can start defying the odds. But if they don't, you've got baseball wall to wall, and hey, you got the Travelers Championship as well.
I'm watching it right now, in fact, and I'll give you
a stat.
Yeah, it's on over here on the left-hand side. McElroy's at minus 11. But I will tell you something, Tom. I saw a stat today for Xander Schauffele. In the tournament, up to this point, and I think he's played something like close to the 36 holes that he needs to play for the 2 days. You know what his greens and regulation percentage is? What do you think it is?
Well, it's either really good or really bad. I'm going to go with really bad, 27%.
No, it's really good. Oh. It's 97%.
Oh, wow.
36 holes of golf, and my man said 97% greens in regulation. You go to hell, Xander Schauffele. That is ridiculous. Oh, sad. Is that you telling me we're out of here? Good work out of you, sir. Thanks for watching and listening, everybody. We appreciate you. I'll be back with you on Monday. Take care.